be argued next is McCaffey versus Schoenig. Mr. Horn?
Judges, counsel, may it please the court. I'm John Horn with my co-counsel, H. Elizabeth Kelly. I represent petitioner Reginald Mahaffey. We're on appeal from the denial of his petition for writ of habeas corpus. We're not waiving any of the claims that we've raised in the brief, but in the 20 to 30 minutes that's been allotted us, we're going to focus on issue number one, with the court's permission. We'll start, if we may, with the facts. The Illinois Supreme Court and the district court got the facts wrong. The state Supreme Court ruled on issue one that a document that was in the post-conviction petition and had November 9, 1982 stamped clearly, dated clearly on its face, didn't exist before 1984. Well, that was self-evidently untrue. The district court continued that error, that factual error, and ruled in its opinion that none of the evidence favorable to the defense had been presented to the state court when our post-conviction petition contained a transcript of testimony at a suppression hearing held November 9, 1982. Those were pages C-530 to 608 of the post-conviction record. And right now, they're in Exhibit 18-11 of the Exhibit I, Volume 3 of what the state filed with the district court, when the state filed the state court record in the district court. So, we've demonstrated that those factual findings are plainly and clearly wrong. For that reason alone, the findings of waiver can't stand. Even if somehow these findings of waiver could stand with respect to evidence that existed before February 1984, when the suppression hearings in this case were held, no court below has ever addressed the portion of the claim that says, what about between the 1985 trial and the 1991 retrial? The post-conviction effort record is full of evidence from
now
that period.
That's something your brief doesn't actually discuss. You don't indicate what, if any, evidence of this misconduct of the police officers in Area 2 was in existence between 82 and, was it 91, did you say, the retrial?
Between the suppression hearings in 84 and the retrial in 91. Oh, but begging to differ with the court, we mentioned that both in the factual statement.
You'll have to point it to me, because when I read your brief, I didn't I didn't see any effort to partition the evidence between pre the retrial and since 91. Am I missing something? Do you discuss it?
I think you are missing.
We talked a lot about, well, where is it? You have a lot about the way you started off, that taking issue with the finding that there was no evidence of police misconduct prior to 84. But what's between 84 and 91?
Well, between that 84 and 91 were other incidents of...
I mean, do you discuss these, or do we have to dig them out on our own?
Well,
I didn't see any mention of them in your brief.
We cited them in our statement of facts. We're under severe constraints when we're writing briefs. We wrote a brief to try and stay within the limitations. And the exhibits are in the record where we say they are.
I'm not questioning that. What I do not see in your brief is some effort to partition this additional conduct of misconduct, additional evidence of misconduct between the period 84 to 91 and 91 since.
Well, I left my brief with the distinct impression that I had done some such compartmentalization. I thought we'd made it clear that there was our first position was there was no waiver as found by the district court and the Illinois Supreme Court.
See,
then
I think all you say is, I'm looking at page 6 of your brief, the prosecution continued to suppress this evidence of which there was more than before. But you don't say what the more is as of 1991.
The more is what we cited in our factual statement. More suppression hearings regarding allegations of police misconduct.
Yes, but some of them are post-91.
Some
you understand there's a difference, right? That it could be significant whether this evidence was available to the prosecution before the trial or after the trial, right?
Right.
Okay, so how do we know what's before the trial and what's after the trial, since you haven't told us? Unless I missed something. Maybe I missed something.
I think you're missing something. I thought that I made it clear what arose between the trials.
Well, I don't see it.
Why don't you tell us what it is that arose, Mr. Martin?
Well, there were, first of all, there were incidents in 1980 between the two trials. I know there was an incident involving a Philip Atkins.
Involving what?
A defendant by the name of Philip Atkins, who alleged he'd been beaten.
By whom?
By one of the police officers who
Mahaffey?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. These are all incidents involving either court proceedings I shouldn't say court proceedings, because the court proceedings do not arise until after 1991. But prior to 1991, there were disciplinary proceedings against Detective Eucaides that were in the Illinois Circuit Court of Cook County, and there was a Goldston report cited too in our brief and in our petition. The Goldston report was a 1990 report. It itself cited numerous instances of police misconduct.
When did Mahaffey first claim that he was tortured in making this confession? Because in the confession itself, he said he was treated fine and made no claim.
Well, he testified.
He had no signs, did he, of physical injury?
Right. Well, I don't agree with that, because there was a photo, and people disagree about what the photo shows. I think it's possible it could show a bruise. The courts below seem to disagree with me.
When in time after this confession did he first claim it was beaten out of him?
According to his testimony, he claimed that it, that he claimed that he told an evidence technician at the Cook County Hospital. So that would have been the evening or perhaps the day after. Now, this is his first trial testimony is in, some of his first trial testimony is in 1815. And of
did
Exhibit
he testify?
I.
Did he testify at the first trial?
Yes.
He didn't at the second?
Correct, yes.
When did he first claim, make a credible claim of having been tortured? What did he say at the first suppression hearing?
He said that if he said that he told the evidence technician at Cook County.
What did he say happened to
him? He said that he was hurting and that, if I recall correctly, that he'd been beaten. But of course, if I'm mistaken, the record speaks for itself. But he made this, he insisted that he told the evidence technician the day after, as soon as he was turned over to Cook County Hospital.
What was it, why was he, did he have occasion, Mr. Horn, to have contact with an evidence technician? Was he taking scrapings from fingernails? What was the...
They didn't take scrapings from the
fingernails. No, I'm just trying to come up with why he would be having a contact with an evidence technician the day after the confession. Is there anything in the record to tell us to support why there would be such a contact?
If I said evidence technician, I
thought that you said, maybe I misunderstood.
No, well, if I said evidence technician, I misspoke. I'm sorry. No, it would have been an intake person at the Cook County Hospital, okay? And they brought him over, and when inmates are brought into Cook County Jail, they're ordinarily checked out.
Yeah.
And the evidence... Or
and he mentioned this at the first at the suppression hearing in 84?
Right, and that person was brought in at the trial to
right.
testify. I thought he did, but if of course if the record indicates otherwise, I stand corrected. But he claims he brought that up first thing, and of course he filed a motion to suppress statements between his arrest and in September of 83 and the suppression hearing.
I haven't
in
seen the or read the transcript of that suppression hearing, but I'm interested in what he said happened to him.
Well, he said he was in his bedroom. This was a bedroom that he rented from Morial Redmond. And he was in there, and he was arrested, taken out to the kitchen, beaten up in the kitchen. He was put in a car. He was beaten in the car. He was taken to Area 2. He was beaten by Detective Sergeant Byrne at Area 2. He had a bag placed over his head. He was suffocated and beaten until he confessed. He testified to that at the suppression hearing and at the trial. So
now, you mentioned Atkins. Atkins is not one of the officers involved, is he?
No, Atkins was a victim.
Atkins was a victim. Who
right.
was the officer?
I'd have to refer to my brief, but it would have either, it had to be one of three. Eucatis, Byrne, or Grunhardt. Those were the three.
So you would have wanted to use that evidence to impeach these people when they testified.
Where
did they testified? Did all three of them testify at the suppression hearing?
All three, I believe, yes. Yes, Grunhard, Eucatis, and Byrne.
But now there wasn't a second suppression hearing in 91, was there?
No.
So what you're really saying is that if the government had turned over this evidence of what happened between 82 and 91, Mahaffey would have, what, obtained a new suppression hearing?
Correct.
So that's not a classic Brady or Giglio claim. You're making something new.
No, it's more along the lines of Kyle's and Strickler, I would say, and as interpreted, well, of course, the Goldsmith case preceded Kyle's and Strickler, but it's in keeping with them. There was a duty to turn that over prior to the second trial. That's why there's no waiver, because of that. Strickler also sets out the rules for determination of cause. We say we've satisfied Strickler as far as showing cause is concerned.
So I take it at the second trial, if Mahaffey didn't testify, there wasn't anything about a coerced confession, was there, at the second trial?
Right. Strickler, we say Strickler applies to the evidence that we didn't, even the evidence that we didn't present to the state court. For example, between the denial of our petition for rehearing, well, during the investigation of the habeas proceeding, I went over to 26th Street and luckily found transcripts of proceedings in other suppression proceedings. If I recall, Alonzo, Smith, Banks, Cannon, and several others.
How did you know what to look for, Mr. Horn?
Well, because there was material in the material I submitted to the Illinois courts that indicated where that such transcripts existed.
And, so, and you got that information where?
I got that.
This is public information.
It's public information. I had to figure out where the transcripts were.
No, I appreciate
there
that.
There are 26 in California.
No, I know that. But you knew to look for the specific transcripts off of what source? What informed you?
Sources that were in the material that I put in my post-conviction petition.
Yeah, and
before the state
where did you
court.
Find that? What was the source of that material?
The material? The source was another attorney at the Capital Litigation Division of the Illinois State Appellate
Court. To look at similar cases that involve similar officers, is that?
Correct.
Okay.
And ultimately, it came from the People's Law Office. Some of it from the People's Law Office, some of it were documents. This Goldston report, for example, that was a report by the Chicago Police Department Office of Professional Standards Investigator. So that's why we say that even this material that wasn't presented to the state courts, there's cause and prejudice for it. And of course, let's get the prejudice, because prejudice equals materiality, which is what the district court really hung its, which was the last-ditch position of the district court. The district court said, well, even if this confession was suppressed, well, there was enough evidence to convict.
Well, before you get to that point, you said in your argument that he complained about the confession being coerced immediately to this intake person at the hospital. Now, the government says in his brief that he did not complain about the confession at an early stage. And in your reply brief, you don't take issue with the government's characterization of the evidence. So what exactly is going on? Have you suddenly remembered that he complained to this intake officer? There's no mention of this anywhere in the briefs.
Well, if I left it out of the brief, I stand corrected. The evidence, though,
is it in the record somewhere, or?
Right. It'll be in 1815, or it'll be in the It'll be in 1815, or it'll be in the suppression hearing transcripts, which are, there are two suppression hearing transcripts. One's an abbreviated transcript that goes from 7:47 to 12:11 of the post-conviction petition, and the other was filed by the state with the record and with the state court record in the district court. Actually, both of them are in that record. They're just
is it in the appellate record?
Yes,
our record.
Correct, both of them.
Okay.
So, no, he alleged early on that he had been that he had been beaten.
So he alleges it at Mr. Horn at the suppression hearing. He alleges it at his first trial because he testifies, right?
Correct.
He did allege that at the trial?
Correct. His testimony is in the trial. His first trial testimony is in the record.
No, I appreciate that. I did, but he reiterated the claim of brutality at the trial.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. And that was a point on appeal in the first trial to the Illinois Supreme Court?
No. No. Not in front of the Illinois Supreme Court. No, that was not raised in front of the Illinois Supreme Court the first time. It's clear to me. I mean, I do a little bit of appellate law, actually quite a bit. I've done it since I started. And, of course, I'm sure that the attorney handling the case looked at it and saw that it's a credibility. The judge ruled on the basis of credibility and said, forget about it. Okay. The trouble is that the credibility assessment was skewed by the state's failure to turn over the evidence that was favorable to the defense. And that includes the transcripts of the other suppression hearings involving other criminal defendants who were tortured by the Area 2 police. But getting to materiality, given that we've got the white light here, the evidence bore on both motions, and if both motions were granted, both the motion to suppress evidence and to suppress statements, there's no evidence. There's a directed verdict of not guilty. Even if the other evidence was admitted and not the confession, Arizona versus Fulminante says no harmless error. In that case, as you recall, of course, there were two confessions. One of them was pretty much like the other. And the U.S. Supreme Court said, oh, no, if one of them's coerced, it's not harmless error.
But the harmless error issue here isn't whether the confession should have been admitted, but whether this alleged Brady or Giglio violation was harmful.
Correct.
So you have to look at all the evidence.
Right. But you've got a pretty good guide to how the evidence should be analyzed in Arizona versus Fulminante. We don't have another confession here. Finally, the Brecht footnote 9 argument is pretty theoretical. Okay,
just a question about the arrest. I don't understand how you get around Stone versus Powell.
Oh, we get around Stone versus Powell very easily. There wasn't a full and fair hearing of the Fourth Amendment claim. The hearing wasn't full and fair because the impeaching material wasn't turned over.
What are you speaking in point of time about the 84 suppression hearing?
Correct.
What did the prosecutor know of other instances of brutality at the suppression hearing, Mr. Horn, that should have been turned over?
Well, certainly the Wilson transcript should have been turned over. Then there were other transcripts that are attached to the petition for writ of habeas corpus, one of which involves Alonzo Smith. There's material exhibits A through F or G, I think, that involving Cannon, involving Bank, involving Lee Holmes.
But your arguments about the search, about the arrest and the search didn't have anything to do with credibility, but with the legal status of, you know, Redmond's legal status, whether he was in position to grant consent, and also whether there were exigent circumstances. I don't see how how credibility enters.
Well,
how impeachment is relevant.
That part of the evidence, that part of the argument was always made in Claim 1. We argued that it would have changed the result with respect to not only the motion to suppress statements, but the motion to suppress evidence.
Why? I don't see that. I mean, if the exigent circumstance or Redmond's authority issues were resolved against Mahaffey, then the impeaching evidence, the police brutality in Area 2 would be irrelevant, wouldn't it?
But once their credibility's in play,
What is it that there's no other issue, though? You don't raise any other issue except those two.
To determine exigent circumstances, it was necessary to rely on the testimony of the police officers. If they're impeached in one thing, they're impeached in all. False in one thing and false in all.
It's not true. But your argument was that there were no exigent circumstances. Granting that, I didn't think there was any argument about the facts bearing on the arrest and the search. I thought these were just legal issues. Given the facts that we know, were these exigent circumstances, or did Redmond have authority to grant permission to search Mahaffey's room?
We've attacked both.
I know you've attacked both, but you've attacked them as a matter of, you know, legal analysis of what the Fourth Amendment permits, not whether the facts are wrong. The facts, I thought, were agreed. And it's the inferences from the facts that are being debated. Did I miss something?
Well, to believe the facts, you've got to believe the testimony of a police officer. How do we know?
Where have you argued that there was any defect in the search and the arrest and search other than that there were no exigent circumstances and Redmond didn't have authority? And the facts bearing on your contention seem to me to be uncontested.
We argued that, if I recall it correctly, we mentioned in our statement of facts that the consent was coerced from Morial Redmond.
Okay, so you want to challenge Redmond's... Yeah, did you argue that?
You don't challenge that Redmond had access to the room, the bedroom, the door was not closed, and it wasn't some private enclave here. These two guys were
that we out. Don't, no, we don't.
You don't contest any of that?
We don't contest that. We contest the voluntariness of his consent. We contest the whether the facts that the police testified to about exigent circumstances are...
I do not understand you. I do not understand how your oral argument comports with your brief. Because you say there was no consent because petitioner's landlord had no authority to validly consent to warrantless entry. You don't say anything about his consent having been coerced. I mean, am I reading the right brief or something like that? You have two pages about the warrantless search, and what I read you was your entire discussion of consent. And there isn't anything there about Redmond having been coerced.
Well, we mentioned it in our statement of facts, and we mentioned the legal insufficiency of the suppression hearing.
Legal insufficiency. What I'm asking you is, have you presented to us the issue whether Redmond was coerced? Now, it's certainly not in the argument portion of your brief. So what's going on here? I don't understand it. I'm see anything about Redmond being coerced.
It's not in the statement of facts?
Well, it is. It says the police burst in and coerced, quote, consent, close quote, to search petitioner's violence. But there's never any statement about that as being part of your argument.
In issue three. Issue three is the part that deals with the legal.
Right, exactly, pages 20 and 21.
Issue.
And of course, this what Judge Evans wrote to you. Police burst in and coerced consent to search from petitioner's landlord. I thought you meant, when you put the quotation around and the coerced, was that what you meant was that the landlord had no authority to grant consent. So then you say they found and beat up petitioner. You don't say they beat up Redmond.
But we did say they coerced consent from Redmond.
Well, you didn't explain what you meant by that. And then when you come to the argument portion of your brief, you don't make an issue of it. You don't say Stone versus Powell doesn't apply because Redmond was coerced.
That's true. We said Stone versus Powell doesn't apply certainly in our reply brief. We said that it doesn't apply because there was no full and fair opportunity to litigate this. And there was no full and fair opportunity because we didn't get the evidence favorable to the defense.
The evidence was irrelevant to any of the arguments you make on pages 20 and 21.
We made arguments with respect to a full and fair hearing of the motion to suppress in issue one as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Horn. Ms. DeAngelis?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Judy DeAngelis on behalf of the respondent. Your Honors, the District Court did not get the facts wrong. Judge Holderman stated in his decision regarding the Certificate of Appealability, in his order denying the certificate, he specifically stated that he knew that there had been a partial transcript that had been included in the state post-conviction proceeding. That partial transcript from Andrew Wilson's motion to suppress hearing from 1982. However, he found that it was not material. And the Illinois Supreme Court had the entire record before it and found that none of the so-called evidence was material to their decision either. As you know, the Illinois Supreme Court and Judge Holderman found that this issue was procedurally defaulted and that petitioner had failed to prove cause and prejudice to overcome the default. Certainly, Mahaffey today is not saying, nor has he ever said, that he was actually innocent of the murders of Dean and Joellen Puchel and the attempt murder of their son, Ricky. Therefore, without cause and prejudice, the District Court properly found that there was no relief to be granted in this case. As to Mahaffey's claim regarding the Area 2 alleged continual duty of the prosecution, he's stating that the prosecution should have been providing the information to Mahaffey from the time of his original motion to suppress hearing in 1984 through his second trial. Well, first of all, Mahaffey never reopened his motion to suppress hearing at the second trial. He's never claimed that his attorney, who was working for him prior to Mahaffey deciding to represent himself at the second trial, he never said that his attorney was ineffective for not reopening the motion to suppress hearing, and Mahaffey himself did not do it. Whether or not there's a continual duty under Brady, you have to look at the elements of Brady. What do we have here? Is there evidence that is favorable to the defendant that would have been material to his guilt or innocence? Mahaffey keeps talking about this so-called evidence. He's talking about transcripts from motion to suppress hearings that are from other defendants' cases that have nothing to do with Mahaffey, that are completely irrelevant to Mahaffey's claims. And we have to remember also...
But they're the same police officers, aren't they?
And, Your Honor, I was just going to say, we have to remember that the trial judge, Judge Hett, made a factual finding that Detective Ukaitis was the only police officer that was involved with Mahaffey's confession. He was the only one that was in the room, and the defendant at trial, at the first motion to suppress hearing, which is the only time that he testified, he did not testify, as you mentioned, at the second trial. He stated that there was one officer that was in control of him, and that was the factual finding. And the only case that has ever been found in which Officer Ukaitis has ever been cited was when he was suspended in the Andrew Wilson case for failing to do anything when John Burge, the commander, was allegedly the one that was doing the beatings. The information that petitioner has provided has been from the defense bar. And in fact, Flint Taylor, the one who has combined all of this information for all of the defendants who have been raising this Area 2 pattern of police brutality, he's the one that has said Commander Burge was the command cord. He's the one that allegedly had these machines that were brutalizing these defendants. Burge is nowhere in this case. There is no mention of him whatsoever, and again, the factual finding that has not been rebutted by clear and convincing evidence is that Ukaitis, not sure how to pronounce, is the one that was the only officer that was involved here. Clearly, there's no cause that Mahaffey can prove. And as Judge Holderman found, there's no prejudice that can be proven either. The evidence of his guilt was overwhelming.
What about this business about the Mahaffey having complained to the intake officer or some sort of intake person at the Cook County Jail? What is that about?
Your Honor, on page 1166 of the record, the emergency medical technician had testified that there were no cuts, bruises, scrapes. Mahaffey told him, according to the EMT, that he had not been hurt whatsoever. And as Your Honors read the record, you will see that the Assistant State's Attorney, Irv Miller, also stated that Mahaffey never told him that he had ever been beaten, and he put in the confession, of course, that he was okay and everyone had treated him fine. But the EMT on page 1166 states that there was nothing that Mahaffey told him regarding injuries. And there was a photograph that's part of this record that shows no injuries. I know counsel has stated that he did not agree with the photograph. However, Mahaffey has failed to present any evidence to this court that would be clear and convincing to rebut the photograph.
Well, at his suppression hearing, did Mahaffey say he told the emergency medical technician that he'd been beaten?
He did, and then he came back on that and said, well, he wasn't sure if he did. There's conflicting testimony throughout the entire suppression hearing that Assistant State's Attorney Angarola, while he was cross-examining Mr. Mahaffey, he waffled back and forth.
Ms. DeAngelis, in the 84-91 period, or 85 from the second trial on, in any of these matters involving Area 2, does Officer Ukaitis appear in these other motions to suppress? The ones that focus, obviously, on Commander Burge, is it?
It is my recollection that the defendants that were listed by Mahaffey in the record that was presented to the Illinois Supreme Court, that there were no other defendants in which Ukaitis had been alleged to have beaten a defendant. It was Andrew Wilson that was the one case. And again, that is the only transcript that was provided. Everything else before this court has been procedurally defaulted, as it was in the district court and the Illinois Supreme Court. Your Honor, Mahaffey has stated that nothing was ever discussed about this newly discovered evidence concerning the evidence after the first suppression hearing. In fact, the Illinois Supreme Court did review this evidence, and they found that even though that issue had not been procedurally defaulted, they found that it was not prejudicial to the defendant. So the Illinois Supreme Court did review that issue and did look at the additional evidence, but under a newly discovered evidence claim, which has not been made here today. With regard to, again, the Brady violation, unless this court were to have any other questions, Your Honors, we would state that he has not proven cause, he has not been able to prove prejudice, and in fact, there was no Brady violation. There was simply nothing in existence at the time of 1984. Additionally, Mr. Mahaffey has talked about, and the court brought up some questions regarding the warrantless arrest. Mahaffey never argued in state court that he did not receive a legally sufficient hearing. And as your court recognized, Stone versus Powell would be the case that would regulate this matter. In fact, he did receive a full and fair hearing. Under Stone versus Powell, he should not even be able to raise that issue. However, Judge Holderman did review it, and he did find that the Illinois Supreme Court's finding was not contrary to or an unreasonable application of United States versus Matlock, where Morial Redmond did have the consent based on the facts that the trial judge was discussing in his finding and what the Illinois Supreme Court found, that he had the consent and that there was exigent circumstances.
Has Mahaffey ever argued that Redmond's consent was beaten out of him?
Your Honor, I have never seen that argument any case. In any level of this case, in the state or federal court. Your Honors, if you have no further questions regarding any of the other issues, we would state that there is simply nothing here that would allow Judge Holderman's review of the matter to be reversed and that relief should not be granted.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
Mr. Horn, your time has expired. This is a capital case, so I'll let you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. With respect to the injuries that Mahaffey didn't suffer, one has to remember that Area 2 employed techniques that were designed to show no injury. Suffocation, which was alleged in the case at bar, doesn't leave marks.
Mr. Horn, with regard to the officer Eucates that was involved in this incident, Ms. DeAngelo says he does not appear in any of the suppression hearings that you speak of as evidencing misconduct. Is it your position just because these officers came from Area 2, this is suspect?
No.
And that's why it's Brady material?
Well, no. Byrne is alleged to have done the beating here. We've cited in our statement of facts and in the other incidents where Byrne beat people. Eucates tended to be more an onlooker, and in this case what we're alleging is that Eucates did the same thing basically as he did in, it's our theory that Eucates did about the same thing that he did in Wilson, which was to stand aside while another did the beating. Now in Wilson it was Burge who did the beating. Okay. Burge's involvement here, there's no evidence that he was physically present. Okay. He was.
So your position is that Sergeant Byrne is the one who applied the...
Right. Sergeant Byrne is the beater here.
You didn't say that in your brief either. I have rarely seen such a discrepancy between an oral argument and a brief.
I'm sure it's in our statement of facts.
No, it isn't.
Well, if it's not, then I stand corrected. But we definitely allege that petitioner was beaten by Chicago police officers, and that the evidence that was obtained thereby was unconstitutionally admitted against him, and that he is in custody unconstitutionally as a result of this, the unfair trial that he received. We
Now, is Byrne also, who makes the arrest? Is it Byrne and Eucades?
It looks like two of Byrne, Eucades, and Grunhard. Probably Byrne and Grunhard. Eucades drives them over to the station.
You said all three in your statement of fact.
Okay.
So,
well, the arrest is taking place in this apartment. Two go into the bedroom. They bring them out to the kitchen. There are more police officers in the kitchen. Then they go from the kitchen to the car. He's taken to the kitchen, from the kitchen to the car. Then he's taken to Area 2. And it's Byrne who does the beating at Area 2.
And he testified to that in the suppression hearing?
Yes. And he was calling Byrne Bryant. He had Byrne's name wrong, so it's very kind of difficult to tie up who he meant to who he's talking about. As far as Stone versus Powell is concerned, we argued that he did not get, we've argued in claim one from the start that he did not get that the suppression hearing was not fair.
Let me ask you if this is fair. It seems to me that it's less likely that a suspect was coerced into confessing when there's substantial independent evidence that he committed the crime and that's in possession of the police. There's no need to coerce a confession out of somebody under those circumstances. And here, there was overwhelming evidence, it seems to me, of his involvement in what was a pretty dastardly murder. And maybe the police, it seems unlikely to me that the police had to get a confession out of him.
Well,
like a case where there's nothing at all except the confession.
So you're suggesting that there's something wrong with the case by the fact that there is this confession?
Well, looking at whether or not there's a Brady violation here, we have to look at how likely it is that there was a confession that was beaten out of this person. And a number of things that we pointed out in the argument, when did he complain about it? Who did he tell? I mean, it seems to me if you had a confession beat out of you, the minute you had an opportunity, you'd tell everybody. I just confessed to something I didn't do because I was beaten. And here, all we have is you say he said to some technician at the hospital, intake person, that I was beaten. That person, of course, denies it, but that's all.
Well, luckily, we don't have just me saying it. We have the prosecutor saying it and the record saying it. So,
not in this case.
Well, he did make a complaint. Okay. And furthermore, the evidence is not that overwhelming, because what you have is an ID witness who says he's 99% sure. 99% sure equals unsure.
Well, isn't he wearing things that came from...
Well, so were other people. His brothers were, I mean, there were about four Mahaffey brothers involved here. There's Roosevelt Mahaffey, there's Cedric Mahaffey, there's Jerry Mahaffey. All of them had proceeds. So, furthermore, he didn't fit the description. And the ID witness couldn't pick him out of the lineup. So
what's your theory as to who the murderers were?
Well, our theory is Cedric Mahaffey was probably one of them. And Reginald Mahaffey was not. But as far as identifying which of the other which of any of the other Mahaffey brothers was involved, we're not sure.
Of course, we know one Mahaffey was convicted and the other. Okay. In fact, that's why you got a new trial here, wasn't it? Because they tried them together.
Right, they were tried together. And my Mahaffey conviction was reversed.
Right.
And he got a new trial.
They admitted, the confession of the brother.
Right. And the brother, of course, is back down in the Circuit Court of Cook County because this court reversed his conviction.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for accepting the appointment. Thank you to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will take a short recess.